Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 24, and this week we'll be doing the 1982 film, The Dark Crystal. But before we get into that, let me go around the room here and see who we have with us this week. And I see my buddy over there, the collector of collections, Mr. Rob Flack O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
What's going on, man? I'm the collector of cold medicine. I'm all, I've been chugging, I got my pills, my DayQuil. My sinus medicine. So right now I am the collector of over-the-counter cold medicine.
I had a little, my first cold of the year already, and hopefully my last.
I know, my wife, well, yeah, I got the cold and I gave it to her. So I had it first, and then I've been calling her the quitter because she likes to go to the doctor. So she got over it in like 2 days, but not me. I'm sticking it out, baby.
All right, man. Well, I hope you feel better soon,
thanks.
Dude. That sucks. And also with us, we have another author with us here today. Joining us again for another time is Doug McCoy from McCoy Cast. What's going on, Doug?
Not much, bud. How you guys doing?
Well, you heard Rob is a little under weather, but he's toughing it out. And
sure. But welcome back, though. Doug's been on the show before.
Yeah, I have. What? I can't remember. Oh, Real Genius.
That's right. That's right.
That's what we did together. So, yeah, it's good to be back with you guys and really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, this should be a good one. This is a great movie. I know when Rob and I were kind of deciding what we're going to do next, it was a little toss-up between Labyrinth and The Dark Crystal. So I kind of leaned on him a little bit.
I'm a bigger fan of Labyrinth, but I liked both these movies as a kid. And it's funny that they are a couple of years apart because in my mind they were almost interchangeable. You know, it seems like a very close date that they were released. But I like both these movies.
I think you lean the right way, Sean. It's my opinion.
And I like them both, but I'll be honest. I didn't even watch Labyrinth when I was younger. I think I might have saw it on HBO a little bit, and I just wasn't a big fan of all, you know, the singing and everything and Bowie, I guess, when I was younger. So, but I've seen that movie a boatload now. My kids love, like my wife loved that movie. So my kids have seen it. They loved it. They'd sing it. And I like it now, but this one, I was like, all right, if I got to think about which one I liked more as a kid is definitely The Dark Crystal. So, so that's what we're going to be doing this week. But, before we even get into that, how was everyone's Thanksgiving? Rob, how was your turkey day? We had a big episode talking about it. How did it turn out?
It actually turned out great. We had about 20 people show up, and it was, like I said, my in-laws brought their crappy stuffing, which I knew they were going to do. They always bring their cornbread stuffing. But actually, the way that it worked out was we had two big tables downstairs, and so my family ended up kind of sitting at one table, and my wife's family was kind of at the other table. Which I think worked better than in the past. You know, we've had like the adult table and the kid table, but this way there were kids, you know, sitting by adults, so everybody could help the kids with different things. And so on my wife's table, they put their cornbread stuffing, and on our table, we put the good stuffing. So that that battle rages on of which family makes the best stuffing.
Right. You had some entertainment set up, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. I have a 48-in-1, a multicade, some people call them. It's a arcade machine that basically plays a bunch of different games, similar to a MAME machine, except for this is hardware based. They're made like in the back alleys of China or something. I don't know. It's all like very, clandestine operation, you know, but, so yeah, I had a spare arcade cabinet. And I just tossed one of those boards in, and it's amazing that I still have enough parts sitting around the garage where the day before Thanksgiving, I'm like, oh, I guess I'll just throw together an arcade cabinet. But but I did have enough stuff.
Is it really amazing that you would have something laying around?
I could probably build a time machine with what's up in my attic. I just pull parts out or something. But no, it actually worked really good. I had the... it was far enough away where the kids could go over there and play it. and stay out of the, I don't want to say stay out of the way, but just kind of be out of the main path where so the adults could sit on one side and talk and chat and do whatever. And then the kids could go over. And of course I was with the kids. So I will say, between my nieces, my nephew, all of them, I think the oldest of everybody that was playing was probably about, 7 or 8 years old. I would like to say that I'm still the reigning Donkey Kong champion. my son is starting to make a run for the title, but I'm holding him off right now as, but he is getting closer to my title, which is silly seeing as though I have 30 years of Donkey Kong experience, but yeah, he's getting better, but the kids had a really good time, you know, so that worked out. And like I said, the machine's still sitting where it was. So I keep telling my wife, yeah, I need to put that back in the garage. But I keep going down there and turning on and playing a little Dig Dug and a little Galaga. So, yeah, it worked out pretty good, though.
How long do you think you're going to get away with leaving it there?
You know, it would be longer, but this particular cabinet, like the coin doors are all rusted on the front, the sides all scratched up and stuff. So if it looked nicer, she would be a little bit more likely to let me keep it in the house, but this particular one's pretty rough. So, you want it in hours or days? I'm guessing about 48 hours is what I've got left. So then it'll probably go back out to the garage for a while.
Well, enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. What can you do?
Hey, Doug, how was yours, man? Would you guys go anywhere?
No, we just stayed here, but, it was pretty good. I, gave myself Wednesday off. And took a college kid out to a sushi buffet, all you can eat. So gorged myself on sushi. Then I went and smoked a humongous cigar while I read a book about the pilgrims and bought some flowers, brought them home to my wife, had fun with my daughter. So I had a great Wednesday. Thursday, read another book, which I always like to do, a Spencer novel, one of the last remaining Spencer novels since the author has gone on. And then, football, turkey, everything I like, man. So, yeah, I had a great day.
Yeah, you try to read a book every Thanksgiving, don't you?
I do. I try to read a book Thanksgiving morning. I don't do the Macy's parade anymore, and which, you know, here in California, it's on time delay anyway. But, yeah, I don't care for that as much. But I always like to try to read a book, particularly a Spencer book on Thanksgiving. It's just my little tradition, and it's just something I enjoy, you know. Bag of Hershey Kisses and Spencer novel and turkey cooking in the oven. It's favorite day of the year.
We actually did watch the parade. We talked about it on our last episode how it's hard for us to get our kids to sit down and watch. I will say my son, my oldest boy, had his tablet the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
But he did get up and he watched a little bit and got up and got a little goofy. My daughter was probably the most into it. All the singing and dancing and stuff like that. But it was pretty nice. We actually got to do it. We actually went to North Carolina to visit my brother. And, I told him, you know, that morning, him and I went out and took a nice run. And I said, dude, we have to, if Uncle Scott says it's going to be on, then it's not getting changed. You know, they won't, if dad says it, they're not going to listen. But if Uncle, so he's like, all right. So he like auto programmed it to tune into it. And, we had a good time.
Oh, and now you talked about on the last episode going to North Carolina. You said you were driving, right? You got the van packed up and everything. How did that go?
You know what? It really wasn't that bad. The drive down took longer. It was like 13 and a half hours. Oh, we had some traffic, hit some rain and fog in the Blue Ridge Mountains. But the way home yesterday, we got home. It was smooth sailing, mm-hmm. Like I said, I had a power strip in the back of the van. Each kid had their own extension cord with a phone charger for their phones and tablets. And it worked out perfect.
Man, so. There's a part of me that hates that, you know, I mean, we go on road trips and my wife is like, oh, we should play the license plate game or we should play, you know, games where who could spot the letters on billboards. My kids, the only thing they want to do together in the car is play Minecraft. And one has an iPod Touch, the other one has an iPad, and they have a wireless connection, and they're literally playing Minecraft. If you think about it, really, I mean, a signal is probably leaving my car, going to a satellite, you know, 100 miles away or something, and then coming back down into the car to the person that's right next to them. But you know, that's what they want to do. And part of me feels guilty for letting them do that, because I think there's so much to see out the window and do that, but also they're very quiet and they're very easily entertained when they're doing that. So the, like I said, there is a guilt that's associated with letting them do that. But on the other hand, I know they're enjoying themselves and it makes it more enjoyable for me. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we've taken many trips down there with younger kids and it had been ugly and I don't care. You know, that guilt thing just, I don't know. It didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing. I ended up making a hotspot with my phone and they were tethering off my phone playing Minecraft and everything. So, but it all ended up, it was all good.
Good.
So glad everyone had a good holiday. But so let's move on to the Dark Crystal. Rob, why don't you go ahead and give us our little rundown of the Dark Crystal.
All right. So this is what I wrote up. And you have to forgive me. There's a lot of difficult words. So if I choke up on this, we'll see how it goes. 1,000 years ago on another planet, a magic crystal cracked, fracturing the Urskeks into two races, the peaceful Urus, or mystics, as they're called in the movie, and the evil, disgusting, and vile Skeksis. The prophecy states that a Gelfling will heal the crystal and bring an end to the Skeksis' reign. In an attempt to thwart the prophecy, the Skeksis slaughtered all the Gelflings they could find, but missed a couple, including Jin and Kira, two Gelflings who, with the help of Augra the Seer, planned to defeat the Skeksis by replacing a missing shard to once again make whole the Dark Crystal. Yeah, that was rough. Do you hear all those made-up words? Skeksis and Augras and Kiras and... Oh, my gosh.
And that's why I let you do it.
Oh, that was tough. There's a lot of literature surrounding this movie. There were books that explained different things in the movie and that gave names to all the people that aren't necessarily named in the movie. But so one thing I didn't know is that when the two species, I guess, were combined, you had the Urus, which is U-R-R-U, Urus, which are called the Mystics in the movie, and the Skeksis. When they were combined, they were called the Urskeks. And then as they split apart, they were the Urus and the Skeksis. So there's all kinds of weird stuff going on in this movie. None of that in the Labyrinth. I know everybody's name in the Labyrinth.
What was the main guy? Who was that like little troll guy in Labyrinth?
Hoggle.
Yeah, Hoggle.
Hoggle, yeah.
They kept getting his name wrong. Hogwart. Hobble, Hoggle, yeah.
When I was a kid, I just remembered everything by sight of what they looked like. I didn't mm-hmm. know any of the names. Was it the Gartham?
Yes.
Like I noticed it now watching it, them saying it, but when the Emperor of the Skeksis or the new Emperor of the Skeksis, I think he was a general or whatever, like when he started calling him out, I couldn't even now as a doll, I'm like, what the heck is he saying?
Right, right.
Until later on when they, you know, I think what's her name? Ugra, she says it a few times and then I kind of caught it from your mm-hmm. notes, but I was like, I didn't know anybody knew this. And if you go to the actual like IMDb or the Wikipedia for this movie, I mean, it breaks down, you know, each character, who the puppeteer was, who did the voice for it. And like, they have names for all the different Skeksis.
Well, and if you want to get, what's really interesting is, if you get down into like some of the books that came out at the same time, the creatures that combined at the end, I'm sure we'll get into all that, but they actually have names that are parts of the names of the two characters that combined. And actually the two characters that combine, like, there's a Skeksis who is listed as a scientist, but then there's one of the mystics that's listed as an alchemist. So those two things are supposed to be kind of like opposite. So those are the two that combine. And the final name is like half of each of their names. It's a lot of work that went into something that I mean, you think is designed for children, stuff that doesn't even come into the movie really, you know?
On the Wikipedia page under the cast, do you think then all these names are coming from like the novels or because I don't remember, I really don't remember any of these, the Scroll Keeper known as the Skekoak.
Yeah, there was a book called The World of Dark Crystal that came out at the same time as the movie, and it really goes into a lot of the lore and the history behind the characters, and gives a lot of the names that I don't think you'd probably pick up on just from watching the movie. A lot of them aren't even in the movie.
Well, we could talk about them later on, because I think some of the ideas for those books and even maybe a possible future movie that I guess has been a whole that mm-hmm. actually sounded pretty cool as far as backstory yeah. goes.
So one of the things that we usually talk about when I do the introduction of the movie is we talk about people that were in the movie and what they did. But obviously, this being a Jim Henson production, the only names that I recognize in there are puppeteers that had to do with the Muppets. Obviously, you have Frank Oz and Jim Henson and all these people that are all associated with the Muppets. But unlike a lot of the Muppet movies, they don't necessarily do or provide the voices for the characters that they perform. So like Jim Henson, was actually the performer for Jin the Gelfling, but he doesn't provide the voice. And so that's where on Wikipedia for each character, there's two or three performers listed for each one.
Doug, is this a movie that you actually went to the theaters to see, or was this another HBO viewing?
No, I actually saw this in the theaters. This is one of very few films that I saw in the theaters prior to being maybe 14 and beginning to have my own money and more freedom. Movies just wasn't something that my family did an awful lot. Somehow I got in to see this one in the theater, was enraptured by it, enthralled by it, loved it, believed it, whatever you want to say. That's how I felt about it. I was the Dark Crystal kid at school, because after I saw this movie, yeah, I would not stop talking about it. I played it on the playground. I had that Scholastic book that Rob mentioned. I remember ordering it, and then you had to wait. You would come in, and if those books came in, they would be sitting on your desk. So every morning,
right? Yeah, the old
class,
the book club, sure.
Exactly. And you're waiting, hoping that book is going to be on your desk that morning. I had a little girlfriend in whatever grade that was, and she was trying to make me a little Fizz Gig puppet stuffed animal to carry around. So I was what Star Wars is to you guys. Dark Crystal was to me because I didn't get to see Star Wars until I was in middle school, at least, maybe not even high school. But wow. I saw the Dark Crystal. Yeah, I saw the Dark Crystal in grade school in the theater and was hooked for life.
And I think I did have a Dark Crystal book. Was it kind of like basically following the movie, like lots of like actual movie images in the book? Is that what it was? Or I kind of remember like that.
Yeah, that's what I think. I don't think it's the one with all the details that Rob was mentioning, mm-hmm. Because if it had been, I would remember all that. I would have memorized that scripture. That would have been canon. So it's hard to believe that I had that one. It must have been, I think it was something much lower than that, much more basic than that. So I think it just was, didn't they used to have those like the movie story books? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I had the same thing. So I totally remember the one you guys had too.
Yeah, so that's what it was. I also saw a making of on TV. And, how I saw it, why it was on TV, I don't know. But I saw it, and I saw the people inside, the Landstriders, and it. And I still believe the movie was real, even having seen, the behind the scenes. It still didn't break the fourth wall for me. But I remember seeing that on TV as well. I was just full into this movie.
See, I never saw that. And I had seen it in our show notes that you had seen that. And I need to go look for that. I love watching stuff like that.
Well, the good news is that it's included on a lot of versions of the DVD and stuff. And I have all the details on that. So we'll talk about that later. I have that same memory that Doug has. I know that I watched that making of. I remember watching the guys on stilts doing the, what were they called? The Landstriders. And just being amazed by that. I want to say that was they must have aired it on HBO, because I didn't see this in theaters, I don't think. I think I saw it in HBO, but I do remember that making of. And, for me, I was a kid who was big time into special effects. I had a couple of VHS tapes filled with the making of movies, special effects things. I had one that had the making of Empire Strikes Back, the making of Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, and so I would watch those, and I loved special effects and stunts, you know, and so I think even more than at the time enjoying the Dark Crystal, I enjoyed seeing the behind the scenes, like how did they, you know, build these sets where you know that there have to be people underneath them to operate the puppets, or, you know, the Landstriders or all these, you know, those giant costumes and stuff. So I think that's what got my attention as a kid, even more so than the movie itself. And watching it just last week, what seemed amazing to me was, you know, we're in a world now where I saw a funny joke the other day. It was on Twitter, and someone said, someone has leaked early photos of the new Star Wars movie, and then it was just a giant green square. And the joke obviously being that it's just, you know, everything is going to be on green screen, and I'm sure it will be. And we're at a point now in movies where you just, I mean, anything you could possibly imagine, you send it off to your special effects company and they generate entire cities and you know, worlds. You can make an entire digital world now. So that's what really got me watching it this time, was looking at these sets and looking at all the things on there that are moving, and just knowing that people actually built this place, that it was a real set.
Yeah, that is great. I mean, I kind of feel like that. I don't mind the prequels of Star Wars, but they'll never be the same. I love seeing the puppetry in Star Wars, you know, Cantina, everybody there. Now it's all, I don't know. I mean, the CGI looks all right. I guess if you're younger, maybe, and that's what you're used to. But I mean, that we didn't have that. And this movie was just, like you said, the sceneries in this movie were great. I know some of the puppetry maybe wasn't as good as some of the other characters in this. I think there were some characters that were really good. I kind of had, I wouldn't say issue, but with the Gelflings, he kind of bothered me. But then, like, the Skeksis. I mean, first of all, I don't know about you guys, but, like, this movie, not as an entire, but the Skeksis as a kid creeped me out, especially the scene when the Chamberlain, I think, Rob, you felt the same way. That scene was pretty strong to me as a kid.
Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. He's screaming. Obviously, he's being, you know, exiled from the clan, but yeah, it's terrible. And even the Skeksis were terrible, but then, what did you say the giant cockroach looking guys are? Yeah, golly, those things. I mean, you know, they had their little lobster pinchers, you know, and when those things, I mean, I remember, literally just, you know, wanting to hide when those things came out and they were going to come get you, you know?
Yeah, they don't seem that intimidating today. I mean, at least the Skeksis don't. I think I could probably take a Skeksis, you know, they're pretty old and bony, and, you know, I think I'm quicker and stronger than them. But the Gar theme still today, I mean, they're just, whoever designed them, man, A+. I mean, that's just a job that you did designing mm-hmm. those creatures.
Now, how did you guys feel about the Gelflings? The same way or no? Did they not bother you?
What
I mean, they didn't
it?
Really bother me, but I guess if I compare them to everything, like the Skeksis, I just thought, I mean, watching it now, I was looking more at the details of the Skeksis, like their hands and everything, like maybe when they grabbed the sword. As a kid, it was just amazing. They still are amazing to me. Even when they stripped the Chamberlain, like all his kind of like bones, like sticking out from his back and stuff. And I don't know, like Jen and what's her name? Kira?
Kira, yeah. I just felt like they're
just too plain.
Yeah, they weren't very emotive, you know, I mean, and obviously, I mean, even like in the Far Superior Labyrinth, when we have Hoggle, we have
peeing in the moat.
Right. But you know, they showed later that it was like an entire mask where, you know, all these muscles and different cables. But obviously that's, you know, 5 years later, I guess, yeah, Labyrinth, I think, is 86 or 87. So, you know, 4 or 5 years later, but technology had just advanced, you know, and these, Kira and Jin, you know, there's just not that much emotion that they're able to put out on those puppets. And for a secondary character or something in the background, it probably would have been okay. But for the main character of the story, I don't know, it's hard to
I think that's what I think you're hitting on exactly what it was for me. I mean, with the Skeksis, you know, his eyes, the chairman, like his eyes would kind of get larger and just showed more emotion when he was getting angry or when he was groveling and begging, you know, where they, Kira and Jen, would have these conversations, but there was just nothing going on in the facial expression. So I don't know, maybe, you know, I love the movie. I'm just saying if we're going to talk about the puppets, you know, that's my opinion on them, I guess. Mm-hmm.
What did you think about the Land Striders this time?
I thought they looked worse. I mean, if you're going to say that the Gelflings look bad, I really, watching it as an adult, I thought the Land Striders, you know, just look like, you know, burlap bags covering them. But they're still such a neat thing. And that's, again, I mean, if you want to compare CGI to practical, yeah, with CGI, you could have made a perfect character covered with hair and all kind of, you know, everything. Still, though, I think I actually prefer that. I'm just kind of CGI'd out, you know, when in Lord of the Rings, yeah, it was great. But, you know, by the time you get to John Carter, it's like, I don't want to do this. And I actually, even though I think the Land Striders, there's some, you know, flaws in the execution, I think I don't know that they hold up, but I think they're still an interesting animal.
Yeah, I think it's a neat idea, you know, and like you, I mean, as a kid, I remember them being very amazing. And as an adult, I felt like, obviously, it's a guy on stilts in a costume, you know, but I guess as an adult, I'm more impressed that they got people to ride around on stilts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's what impressed me, was the execution of it more than the way it came off on film.
Yeah. See, I loved them as a kid. I remember we had some crutches at the house.
Oh,
I have no idea where they're from, but I can remember having them under my arms and trying to take long strides. You know, after seeing the movie, didn't always work out too well, but I love them. And I honestly really, other than what I said about Jen and Kira, I watched it, you know, I didn't pick it apart. I kind of took all those little things, and just said, hey, this is just what it was back then before. And I guess, enjoyed or appreciated the fact that there wasn't the CGI in it, that I could just overlook, you know, everything you would pick at now, I guess, compared to a movie now. I loved all the stuff. I mean, the Skeksis still creep me out, you know, gave me that feeling of I could feel myself as a young kid watching that movie. And those are what really stood out to me, with the Skeksis and the Land Striders. When I would think back to this movie, because, I mean, I saw it in the theaters. I saw it on HBO when it came out. We had it taped. My mother has DVD. And so my oldest boy has seen it within the last, you know, 6-7 years. I really hadn't watched it a lot until recently. I don't know. I think the movie itself stands up, or, you know, it still holds up. Let's talk about like the jungle kind of scene, like that scene with everything that's going on. Doug, I know you had, you know, mentioned about everything just was alive.
Yeah. I mean, the whole place, it's, you don't know whether to, you know, think it's a wonderful landscape or it's a terrifying landscape. I mean, this is the idea that I always have, is if you suddenly find yourself on an alien planet, or even if I found myself in the rainforest today, you know, everything's alive and trying to eat me. I may well have gotten that idea from this movie, because, I mean, that's what, you know, even when he's going up to Agra's, those, I don't know what they look like, moss or lichen or something. And they're orange,
yeah,
and pink, and they all start rolling away. And then the vines grab him and tie him up. Then you get into the pod people's forest, and there's that one creature is running and after some bugs, and it looks like there's a cave, and the cave closes and eats him. And then all those little mushrooms like react to that, you know?
Yeah.
And,
like little birds chirping.
Yeah.
Kind
you
of,
you don't know if
like
that's like part of it and it's enjoying the meal, or if there are other animals like shaking in fear or something. I don't know. You've got those dandelion seeds flying into the air. I mean, it's just, everything is alive. Hot Pink Heather watched it with me, and she loves it as much as I do. But at that scene, she did say, you know, what were they smoking? Because this is just, you know, psychedelic and far out and, you know, really something.
It plays very well into the movie.
Oh, I still remember it today. I mean, I remember it scene for scene today. So it's incredibly effective. It's very strange, kind of intimidating. I mean, I still find it kind of frightening. I would not want to be there. And yet at the same time, like everything in this movie, we'll probably talk about this later, but everything in this movie just seems to make sense to me. I don't know how that is. I don't know how they pulled it off, but you just look at it and you say, yep, that's exactly what it would be. And the forest felt that way for me. So all those ideas in, what, 45 seconds of screen time, mm-hmm. it just, you know, that's how deep this movie is.
Yeah, I thought, you know, when I was watching it, like that scene and some other scenes that, you know, let's compare it to Avatar. When I saw Avatar, which was an entire, essentially, CGI world, you know. So the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, well, does this look real or does it look not real? Or, you know, I don't know. I find my mind wandering about the CGI parts. But because this is an actual set that somebody built, there's something about it, you know, the way that your brain processes is that you're like, well, there's a Gelfling, and he's walking through the forest. I mean, you're not questioning how they did it because it looks like a real place, you know, and all those details play into that and make it where, I don't know, it's just a different way that your brain interprets it, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe I smoking when I watched it?
It's all your cold medicine.
It could be, yeah.
You know, the only, I think maybe really the only scene that maybe I kind of looked at was like, yeah, really, what was the point? Was where the, when they were eating. Now, I know, you know, that's when Agra, when she comes in and starts kind of, you know, bitching at him for destroying her home. Mm-hmm. But that whole, like, just that feasting scene. I don't know. To me, it went on a little too long, and it was only probably like 25, 30 seconds, maybe a minute or something. But, you know, that part, I guess I was like, eh.
Yeah. Well, that's an important scene from Agra's perspective because
right.
up until that point, Agra is basically, I mean, in that scene, she basically tells the Skeksis that she would have given them the Gelflings if they had just asked, you know, and she's like, why did you come burn down my house? You know, if you wanted the Gelfling, you should have just asked for the Gelfling. But so that's kind
of, do you think she meant that for real though? Or do you think she was just, you know, just blowing off steam as like, look, you didn't even go to that step. You didn't even ask.
Well,
I like to believe that she was just blowing off steam.
Well, here's the thing is she just marched into the Skeksis kingdom. She walks in, she interrupts their meal and starts, you know, yelling at them and stuff. So there's only one of two ways I think that could happen. One is because they are not threatened by her at all. In other words, that she is at least a neutral type person. She's not a friend or an enemy or whatever, that she's just, you know, somebody that would have access to walk in. Or they're afraid of her, you know, and maybe because of her magical powers or whatever, but I mean,
right. Or she's useful.
Mm-hmm. Possible.
She's a seer. Yeah. There's no essence to be drained from her to benefit them.
Yeah.
I guess I really liked her character, and you know, I do remember as a kid when that scene went down, when they invaded her house and it shows it in flames in the background and Jen kind of leaves. I felt really disappointed as a kid when he then meets Kira, because I was like, well, I wanted her to be with him. You know, her character to me, even though she appeared, you know, I guess physically a little, to a kid, I would maybe think maybe a little creepy, at least it was for me. I don't know. There was something about her I liked, you know, I thought this is someone that's actually going to help him in his travels. And then next thing you know, as far as you know, is, you know, seeing the film for the first time, she's dead. Because the whole entire place just gets destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did you guys feel about the character of Kira? Did you like that character? Because I, like I said, very disappointed when I first met her. I grew to like her, but I don't know, the as a kid, if we talk about it like that way, those scenes were boring as heck to me. Now, as an adult watching them, I like them. They build, they add to the plot of the story and their relationship. But as a kid, those are like parts I was just like, oh, here we go.
I was in love with her. Kira's one of my first, you know, movie crushes. I mean, one of the first movies I'd ever seen, you know, and she's beautiful. I mean, really, for a Gelfling, I guess, but she's smart, funny. She's smarter than Jen. That's how I perceive her. She's more courageous than Jen, more level-headed than Jen. She's more the driver than he is. And I was full on in love with her. Just, I thought she was great.
Well, Jen was raised to learn how to read and how to communicate and stuff like that, where she, being raised by, what was it? The pod people? Who raised her?
The potato people.
Yeah.
That's what they look like to me, is little potatoes.
Well, it seemed like more of a fun, hands-on kind of upbringing, completely different than what he had. You know, there was a purpose for him, which kind of, I don't know, that whole movie thing where, you know, the purpose doesn't come out until the end when his master is dying. That's when he's going to reveal to him that there's this like great adventure ahead of him.
I don't know. The difference for me is he is like the not the unwilling, but he is the character, and there's probably an archetype for this, but he's the character that gets thrust into the adventure. You know, I mean, when this movie starts, he doesn't know that he's going to go on a quest. He doesn't know all these things. Whereas Kira, I mean, she's been training for this sort of thing. You know what I mean? She's ready to go. She's lived out in the wilderness and with the potato people. I don't know what they were. What are they called, really?
The pod people is what they call
them. Pod people? Yeah. All right, yeah. But so, you know, she's had to learn all these survival skills and stuff where Jen didn't really have to do that.
I think the term that Rob's looking for, though, about Jen, I think it's reluctant hero. Is that what they call that archetype where, you know, he doesn't really want to be set on the quest, but it's destiny or fate or whatever, and he's forced to go out on a quest? So you could see him like that, the reluctant hero. And I understand, you know, Kira has got more of the training, and he's got a different training. I think, you know, what Sean's talking about, Kira remembers what Gelfling life is like. I'm not sure if I said that correctly. And Jen had been taught how to read. So I see those as two different things. But beyond that, I mean, let's be honest. Jen is like the Luke Skywalker of the Dark Crystal. He's, you know, whiny and petulant and, you know, just not as man. I mean, I'm sorry. I know you guys are Star Wars fans, but there are plenty of times where I watch Star Wars and I'm like, man up, Luke.
Right.
You know,
sure.
You're a Jedi. Jedi up. And I felt the same this time watching The Dark Crystal. I was like, Jen, you know, grow a pair and get that crystal and let's get this done, you know? So maybe that's why, you know, even as a kid, Kira was the more attractive to me because she was a little less, you know, whiny.
Right. You know, that the scene that, I guess, where I felt that the most was near the end, where, you know, he has the shard, he knows what he needs to do, and because he's taking so much time, I guess we don't have to say spoilers, do we? Do we have to say spoilers for 30-year-old movies anymore?
Listen, we'll state this rule now. We will never say spoiler on this podcast.
All right.
Most of everything we're going to do.
If you haven't watched it by now, it's too bad. But Jin gets stabbed.
Kira.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Kira gets stabbed by the Skeksis I felt like during that whole scene, like if Jin had just put the shard in when he had the chance, you know, but he's just, I don't know, he's just, he's a Gelfling who drags his feet. So.
Yes. I'm watching that scene going, move, man, move, come on.
Yeah, I forgot all about that part, that had happened to her. Just like I forgot about the fact that she had the wings.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And I at the end, what I forgot about was, we're supposed to believe anyway that Kira is dead, and then Jin carries her up, and then, you know, at the very end we have these magical creatures, and they're, I'm like, I don't remember if she almost died or I don't remember what the deal was. And then of course it's a Jim Henson movie, so even if someone dies, you know, you're like, oh, at the end they're gonna make an appearance or come back or something, you know. And sure enough, they're able to just bring her back.
What I did like was when a Skeksis would die or a Mystic would die, how its counterpart from what it had split, you know, they had split from one earlier before the, what do they call it when the suns all aligned? The conjunction.
The great conjunction.
Right. I liked that whole idea that they had split into two, and then when one would pass, its counterpart would pass as well. But watching it, it seemed, you had the Mystics, who kind of, it seemed, accepted it because they were moving to somewhere else possibly, or they would see you in another life, where the Skeksis, their whole thing was to not die, not only to rule, but to not die, mm-hmm. to suck the essence of like the Podling people, just to keep themselves going. I like that whole thing. And then at the end of the movie, obviously, you know, when the crystal has been completed again, and they basically become one again and move on to, I don't know if it was supposed to be another realm or where it was supposed to be, but I did. And I don't think I honestly don't think I got it as a kid, what was really happening, why one would die and one, the other would die, until, you know, I was older and I watched it. But my 5-year old, he got it. He was explaining it to my wife in the car, you know.
Well, the and I'm guessing that maybe this had already happened before, because the scene where the Mystics are just walking across the desert, they're heading to, I guess, the Skeksis castle, and they're on their way, and then one Skeksis dies, and then the Mystic disappears. All the Mystics look at him, and then they just kind of shrug their shoulders. They're like, oh, well. There goes Bob.
Yeah, they don't react.
they don't react too much. And then they just turn back and keep walking.
Yeah, well, because they figure they'll see him again, because his master says that, like, I'll see you again. Remember me. I'll see you again in another time or whatever. Mm-hmm. I won't see you again here, though.
Right, right.
So I think they just...
We may meet again in another life, but not again in this one.
There you go.
Is what he says. Yeah, so, but the same thing happens, too, what Rob was talking about, when Jin stabs the Chamberlain, and he is screaming, says, ah, my hand. And then we cut to the Mystic, and a wound appears on his hand, and he just says, so, my hand. So you see that same thing there. They don't react that much to death and injury the way that we would.
Right, and you got to think that the Mystics got the short end of that stick, too, because, you know, the Mystics are not punching each other in the face and fighting over food like the Skeksis, you know. So the Mystics, you got to think every day they wake up with a new wound, and they're like, oh, God, those Skeksis must have been partying hard again, you know, where this... but the Skeksis, they never wake up, you know, with a new wound or something on them.
Yeah. Yeah, so does that work for, like, everything? So, like, you know, they wake up hungover, you know, and they wake up with, you know, I don't know, credit card debt or something. I mean, you know, what all does it apply
right,
to?
Right, this is the Muppet version of the Corsican brothers.
Another thing I was, you know, noticing now, I'm watching with the Skeksis as the Emperor is dying in the beginning. And, you know, they're all huddling around to see who is going to be, they'll take over. I kind of thought, well, wouldn't they have maybe had someone appointed to take over afterwards? Or, you know, I guess we wouldn't have the decision by the rock, or I don't know. Was
trial by stone.
See, I'm just going to, Doug, what was it called?
The trial by stone.
That's right. Yeah. Was it Monty Python where they talk about how throwing swords into a lake and having them rescued is not a good system of government, you know. that's kind of what I thought during this scene. I thought maybe we should have a Skeksis election, and each person should talk about why they should be the leader, not who's the guy to hit the rock the hardest with a sword. But
well, they each have their own following.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I still thought it was pretty cool. You know, and going back to the scene where they basically banish the Chamberlain. Do you think, well, let me ask you, do you think he was screaming more because not so much of being hurt, but just of the whole situation that he was being banished and they were just all swarming him, taking off his clothes, his armor or whatever? I don't know. That part really stood out to me as when I look back at it.
That part is so disturbing to me. That's what keeps me from watching this movie more, quite honestly. There are many times where, you know, I'm flipping through my movies and I see all the Dark Crystal, and I think of this scene, and I say, nope, and I go to something else. I mean, really, I don't know how I interpreted it as a kid. I think the way we're supposed to see it, because I've seen the behind the scenes and everything, is that it's not pain, but humiliation and anguish, that his clothes are being ripped off, that was their sign of status and so forth. But, I mean, really, guys, it's a rape. It looks like a rape is what it looks like, and it's so very, very disturbing to me. I wouldn't have minded had that part been cut. If I could take anything out of this movie, I would take that out. I understand why it's there. I don't like it.
It's a very heavy scene, you know, for, I mean, because, you know, like Sean said, when I was a kid, I thought that he was physically being hurt, you know, and that's what the screams were. But when you're seeing it as an adult, it's more like he's being stripped of his role in their society. He's being, you know, having all of his physical possessions are being removed. So he's being embarrassed. He's being, you know, just being removed of everything he has and sent on his way. But again, isn't it amazing that you would find something that would be, something that would affect you on an emotional level. Then when you step back, you're like, well, these are just puppets. You know what I mean? Like, but it's so well done that you get so immersed in this world that you don't even think about that. I mean, it's an emotional scene.
Yeah.
So when Jen finally does find, Ogra, like, what do you think of her place? Like, what is that called anyways? I know you put it in the notes. I've never heard of it until I looked it up earlier. I was just thinking it was some sort of solar system thing that she had built.
The orrery? Is that how you say that? I have never heard this word before.
I had never heard that until I read it in the notes. Yeah, I'd never
right.
heard
it. Right, and I looked online. It said that an orrery is a mechanical device that illustrates the relative positions and motions of the planets and moons in the solar system. And then it said there are a lot of historical examples of these, but the first one made in the modern era was made in 1704 and was presented to the Earl of Orrery, which is where it got its name. So it is actually a real thing. I had no idea what it was called, or I got a feeling I've seen these like maybe at a science museum or something as a kid, you know, not as extravagant or detailed as the one that's in Ogra's. I mean, what a centerpiece in the middle of her thing. And that's how she knows that the suns are about to align and that
right.
the time is now for him to heal the crystal. But and again, I know I keep going back to this, but this is pre-CGI. Yes. Somebody built that thing.
Well, yeah, and that's why I wanted to talk about it, because it really was massive and very impressive for that scene.
You know, I know that this movie was advertised as, and this was a selling point at the time, the first feature-length film, live-action film, that contained no human beings. Now, when you watch it now, there are certain scenes where you could see that, like when Jin is running around, that it's obviously just somebody in a Jin costume running. It's not a puppet. So there are some scenes. But there are some scenes with the orrery that have people, I think Jin, somebody running around. So you could tell the scale of this thing. It's massive.
Yeah, that was an impressive thing to see as a kid. I had no clue what it was. But just the way they film it, I mean, the camera's behind him. He goes through the doors. They open up and you see this thing. And as a kid, I understood what it was for. I understood what it did. But, you know, if you buy into the spectacle theory of movies, you know, that people like to see the spectacle. Wow. I mean, what a spectacle for, what is this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, it's a much better orrery, by the way, than when we get in Pitch Black. You know, there's an orrery in Pitch Black as well. This one's much better, but, this sure. is one of the things I remember best of the film. One of the things that struck me as a kid, I'd love to play on it. Even today, watching it, when he grabs that thing and rides up on it, I would love to do that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great cinematic moment. I mean, it's an absolutely great cinematic mm-hmm. moment.
Yeah, I really like that part. And when I saw it as an adult rewatching it recently, I was just like, man, that thing is just so massive. So real, like you said, Rob, impressive that it wasn't some small scale model that was being shown, that it was actually something big that was mechanically working. It was really cool. Definitely cool. What'd you guys think of Fizgig?
Oh, I loved Fizgig. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't like him, man.
Oh, really? What?
The only thing I liked about him was that when he would like bark or whatever, he had like a second set of teeth like in the back of his
yes.
throat.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool, but otherwise.
Well, I always liked the little things that, you know, could be your buddy, your sidekick. when I was a kid, you know, so FizzGig, you know, just FizzGig, Gizmo, my buddy, you know, I don't anything like that. I just, you know, thought was wonderful. And that is why, as I said, I had a little girlfriend who was trying to make me a FizzGig, because I would love to have a FizzGig riding around on my shoulder, you know, when I went to grade school.
Yeah, I think this is a fairly common Jim Henson type thing. Like in Labyrinth, you know, you've got the little dog that they had running around, you know, in a lot of the movies, he has that little tiny furry thing. And Kira, you know, has to have that something, the balance, you know, something that's pushing Jin away, something that's kind of pushing off this little love attraction that we're seeing. Because obviously, I mean, they're the only, as far as we know in the film, now in the some of the literature, we find out that there are more Gelflings. But as far as the movie universe is concerned, that we only know of that there's these two Gelflings. So there's not a lot of suspense as to who they're, you know, Jin is not going to end up with Agra. I mean, we pretty much know that.
Thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody should end up with Agra. Agra shouldn't be with Agra, true. You know.
Speaking of like the books and everything, I was reading, I'm sure you guys saw it too, like they had discussed making a sequel to this movie. I don't know if I'd want to see that. I mean, Doug, how would you feel about that? I mean, being such a fan of this movie, I'm sure there'd be a lot of CGI built. Like, is it something you'd be looking forward to?
Not if they did CGI. If it was a CGI thing, I would have to see it. No matter what they did, I would have to see it, which, you know, maybe that's why they keep doing this, because even though we know we're going to hate it, you can't not do it, you know? So I would have to see it. If it was a CGI fest, no, I can guarantee I'd be disappointed in that. If it was more like this, you know, even with a little CGI, but still mostly practical, mostly puppets, I would be interested in seeing what happens next. I don't know. I'm pretty happy with it as it is, but I would have to see it, and I'm somewhat interested in it. So, you know.
Would you rather it be a prequel? I think I would be more interested in a prequel, so showing, you know, the extermination of the Gelflings, or what they thought to be, and the conjunction and this before there were the Skeksis and the Mystics, or that prior to, and then that happening. I think to me that would be more interesting than taking the story from where it left off.
Well, if I'd never seen Star Wars Episode One, I might say yes, but no, I'm not much interested in prequels. I'd rather see the sequel. You know, the info that Rob passed along to us, it's interesting enough. So I would be interested in seeing something like
right.
that.
Right. So the so what they had, it was called Power of the Dark Crystal. It was a play-in sequel. It looked like it had been passed around Hollywood for several years. There's some pre-production paintings and artwork to show what the characters would look like, and it is an older Jin and Kira together, and it looks like that, I don't know, it kind of fell into limbo, but it looks like they worked on it off and on for about 10 years, and the last word is that it's been shelved indefinitely. But I would, I don't know, I always feel weird about these types of, like a sequel that's, well, if this is 82, this would be a sequel that's 31 years later. It was like when they came out with the, I don't know, there's lots of examples, the Blues Brothers sequel, you know, where it's like, who's this for? I mean, the original audience seems like they would have moved on, you know? I guess it would be for people our age who grew up on Dark Crystal and would, you know, show our kids the original and then take them to the movies to go see this sequel. But it just doesn't seem like it would be a big, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Star Wars, that's one thing. And I'm not saying that as all Star Wars and Dark Crystal sucks. Just as, I mean, just, but I mean, just box office wise and where Star Wars is, I mean, it really can, they can afford to do that. Everyone's going to go want to see, not everyone, but, you know, it's going to get a lot of attention for Star Wars, where Dark Crystal, a lot of people love that at our age. And I think a lot of people, like the three of us, would go to see it for whatever reason, whether we like it or not. But I don't know if it would have the draw to our you know, people our age as much as right. Star Wars would.
Well, I think it would have to be a standalone. I think it would have to be something that's made where you didn't have to see the original.
Right.
You know, something that, that would stand on its own.
I mean, honestly, I don't want to see it happen anyways. I'm perfectly happy with movies we grew up with, just leaving them alone. I don't like seeing all the remakes all the time. I wouldn't want to. I just don't want to see it. I like this movie for what it was. I really enjoyed it as a kid. I really enjoyed watching it now as an adult. I would still go see it. You know, like Doug said, I would go see it, but it's not something I'm like, oh, I hope they come out with another Dark Crystal.
Right. No, I felt like, to be honest with you, I felt like this movie told a complete story. I mean, you know what happened and you know how it ended, and Jin, you know, saves the day and Kira comes back to life and you assume they live happily ever after. And hopefully Agra rebuilds her orrery and the Ooskeks go off to, you know, wherever they went off to, and that's it. I don't need to find out what happened next. To me, it wrapped it up.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to find out what happened next if it was bad. You know, it almost kind of looked that way in this Power of the Dark Crystal that Rob showed us. I mean, it looks like, you know, Jin and Kira become bad guys to some degree or something, or, you know, they're at least guilty of doing something wrong or something. You don't want to see that. You ended with them as heroes. I want them to be sure. My heroes forever. You know, so there is, like I said, I'm mildly interested to see what would happen, but there's so much that could go wrong, so much that could ruin
yes.
the original that, you know, you probably ought not to touch it.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you guys, like, your feelings as far as remakes? Like, I've never seen, and we may even have talked about this in a previous show, Red Dawn. Like, I've never seen the remake of Red Dawn. I loved that movie as a kid so much that I just don't want to see it. My wife watched it. I actually walked downstairs once when she was watching it, and I walked in on a scene that I know what they were recreating, but it was totally different, and I was just like, I don't want to see this. I mean, are you the same way, or do you not care? Do you just go, watch, it's a movie?
Me? No, I don't watch any of them. I didn't see we talked a little bit. I didn't watch the Footloose one. I caught a little bit of the Karate Kid one on cable, about 5 minutes of it. I feel like and part of it, I think, is probably which one you grew up on, because my kids prefer the new Willy Wonka, and I prefer the original Willy Wonka, you know? I just think, I don't know. There's so many scripts and ideas and things out there to be made. I don't really understand. I mean, I understand why they remake them, because they're lazy, but I don't understand why people would want to go see it, you know, really, to be honest with you.
I'm about the same. I can't think of too many that I like. The only two off the top of my head is the 78 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and then the 82 The Thing, and that's hardly a remake. So Willy Wonka, no. Red Dawn, didn't see. Karate Kid, wouldn't touch. I know they're going to do Back to the Future or Gremlins someday or Goonies, and it's just like, oh, please don't, you know?
I dread it. And, you know, and I know what you're saying, Rob, because I say the same thing. It's like, why do they have to keep – it's like it's the cash cow thing. Like, well, like you said, well, okay, we'll redo Goonies. Everyone knows Goonies. Everyone, you know, it's a big name. We don't have to promote it very much. It's Goonies remade, but it's just – it's not going to be right, the Goonies. Right. It's not, and that movie, I don't know, maybe we're being selfish, but that movie is good enough.
Yeah.
My kids have seen Goonies. Right. They like
Plus,
Goonies,
you know, they're going to get – you know, whichever of the Goonie kids is hard up for cash right now, and they're going to be, you know, some cameo. They'll be the guy in the cafe at the beginning drinking a coffee real slow, and you'll be like, oh, I know who that is. That's, you know, that was the original Mouth. But yeah, I just don't see a purpose for them.
Well, and they don't even know what it was that made these movies good. I mean, there was some heart that these movies had that made them the cultural things that they were back then, and these people who are remaking them have no clue. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just, you look at that and you think to yourself, how did you even get a career? You know, how did you even get anywhere in Hollywood? Because you don't seem to know, you know, the very simple things that made us love these characters, love these props, love these stories. You take them and you desecrate them, and then you charge us $15 to see them. And it's, yeah, it's, not a fan.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we try to cover that then.
Did we kill it?
We got it.
Well, I'm sure there's people listening that feel the same way, and then there's probably other people, you know, like my wife, who are just like, who cares? I want to watch
a
movie.
And those people are wrong.
Yes, and I tell her that all the time, and it does not end out well for me when I do that. So, but I mean, I don't watch a ton of TV now. I don't watch a ton of new movies. I mean, I do. It's just I just find I don't have a time to do it. Sometimes I'm, you know, just rather do other stuff. But my wife, you know, she will watch just about anything. So she's like, I don't care. It's a new movie. I don't have the attachment that you do.
Boom.
So, yeah. Another thing, Doug, I think you agree, the music for this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it. Loved the music for this.
I don't have the words to describe it. And I don't know who the composer was. But it's beautiful. It's evocative. It's sad. I mean, there's a lot about this movie that is sad, and that music carries the sadness. It's not exactly memorable, I don't think. But when you watch this movie, it's just like, yep, that's exactly what it should be. You know, I mean, do you ever like a guitarist will do like a guitar riff, and there's no way in the world that I could write a guitar solo. You know, but when I hear them, you think, oh, I could have done that because that's so clearly what it should have been.
I know what you mean, it should
have been that. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. That's the way I feel about the music of this movie and also the look of this movie. It just is what it should have been. I don't know how that works. I can't explain it. It just, you watch it, you hear it, and you say, yep, that's exactly what the Dark Crystal should have been.
What about you, Rob? Did you like it? Or you're not really into the scores of movies.
No, I would agree with what Doug said, that I just thought it fit. You know, I mean, I thought that it was, you know, it carried the emotion of the film and it was fitting. I couldn't hum you any bars from it right now. You know, I mean, as far as there being a theme song or something, and there's no catchy song tunes like there are in that Labyrinth film. I don't know if you guys have seen that film, but I thought it was a good score, you know. So you know what? Let's talk about my favorite thing. My favorite thing is stuff. And so we talked a little bit about the Scholastic book. I think we all remember seeing that Scholastic book. And surprisingly, and I don't know, I guess it's not surprising if you really think about it. I mean, this is a Jim Henson production, so you know there's going to be merchandise associated with the film. But the film, from what I found, cost $15 million to make and only grossed about $40 million in theaters. So it was not a huge blockbuster. There were a couple of factors involved in that. One of them is it was released on the same day as Tootsie. And so I guess it was competing for, not that I think that there's two different audiences, I would say, but yeah. But so that it had that. But then one thing that I saw was that it said it was competing with E.T. And so I looked it up because I thought that it was much earlier in the year. And E.T. was released in the early summer. And this was released the week before Christmas. So I thought, well, how could that be? But I guess E.T., you know, there was another push around the holidays.
Or something?
To bring it back in.
Yeah.
For a guy like me who likes to collect stuff, there are a lot of Labyrinth things out there. There's the book we talked about, both books. There's the Scholastic, the picture book we talked about, and there's the World of the Dark Crystal book. Like I said, this is more of a legends lore type book that has, you know, the history of the characters and all these different things. So Doug is probably on Google already right now looking up. I don't know how much this goes for. I don't think it's very much, to be honest. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of details if you're into this movie. There was a Dark Crystal board game, which is essentially the typical type of game where you're trying to, you know, race from one side of the board to another and you draw cards and do different things. You don't want to get stuck in the quicksand like Jin or get attacked by the potato people. I guess the potato people didn't really attack anybody. So there was a board game. There's also a computer game Dark Crystal computer game, which was out for the Apple and Atari computers, I believe. It's a text adventure, but it's one of the graphical text adventures. So you typed in commands to go through the adventure, but it would then show you static pictures of things you were looking at or whatever. And I do remember playing that. I was right around this time we had an Apple II. So you could actually go on YouTube and look for the Dark Crystal. If you just type in like Dark Crystal computer game or whatever, you'll see, you can look at the graphics and stuff. There were Dark Crystal records released. Like you said, the soundtrack was released. And actually, there is a remastered version of the soundtrack available on CD. So if you like the soundtrack, you could go find that. And there were, along with that Scholastic book, there were the read-along adventure type books. You remember those where it would say, you know, turn the page, right?
Absolutely.
When that Jin yep. blows on his magic flute thing or whatever he had. I don't know what it was. Yeah, those were out there. Then in 2002, Sideshow, and I think we talked about Sideshow a little bit, they released some of the horror action figures we talked about on the Halloween episode. In 2002, for the 20th anniversary of Dark Crystal, they released some different characters. They have a... I'm trying to think of the different figures. I know there's a Jin figure, and there is a Fizgig figure and a Kira figure that were released. So those...
Do they have like a plush?
Yes. Yeah.
Fizgig.
Yeah.
For,
yeah. I need a light
for dogs.
You know what I thought would have been a great marketing thing, and I wish they would have done is I could have seen some Fizgig house slippers. Can you not see that with just some big furry things with little you know teeth on the end of it? That would have been great.
And your feet go right into the mat.
It'd be like reversed. Yeah.
That's how they should work.
Yeah, one of the stranger things that I found. That was marketed was some of the people that actually worked on the costumes on the film founded a clothing line based on the Dark Crystal. And so they actually sold clothes and things that were based on that world. So they kind of looked like fantasy type clothing and stuff, but they were actually like they were shown like in fashion shows and actually sold. So I don't think it had a life of its own. not a lot of people wearing Dark Crystal clothing today, but I'm not saying it's bad.
I see it at the Scottish Games all the time.
It looks just
all the time.
It looks just like
Games.
It.
Yeah. Jin and Kira are always there.
Okay. The other thing I had was the releases, and this movie has been released a lot, so I'll run through it really quick. It was originally released on VHS. There are three different releases in VHS, and they are all full screen. So, you know, you're going to lose a lot of the extra backgrounds and footage and stuff if you get the full screen version. It was released on Laserdisc in 1990, and that version has some extras on it, and then re-released again in 1994 without any extras on it. Now, where it starts getting interesting is the DVD releases. The first release was in 1999, and it is called the Special Edition. And it has some extras on there, but it is a one-disc release. In 2003, there is the Collector's Edition, which has all the features of the Special Edition, but I think maybe one thing was removed, and they changed one of them. One of the features that's on there in 2005. And what's confusing about these is that they're all named similarly. There's the Special Edition, the Collector's Edition. In 2005, there's a DVD release that is the same as the Special Edition, except for they removed their a track on the 1999 edition that is just the film score. So it doesn't have any of the dialogue or anything. So now, the one that you want to get, if you can find it, is the 2007 DVD. And that is the 25th anniversary edition. It says 25th anniversary on the front. It is the remastered, digitally remastered one, so it looks beautiful. This is actually the one I own. It is two DVDs, and it also comes with a commentary track, which is new, and it has all the extra features from all the other DVD releases. Then they re-released it again in 2008, which is another two-disc one, but it doesn't say anniversary edition. That one only has the first disc from the 25th anniversary, and then the second disc comes with a digital copy that you can then put on, I believe, your PSP or PS3. So a lot of different versions out there, but the best one, and the one that I have, is the 25th anniversary, if you can find that one. Now,
no Blu-ray, huh?
I don't know if it's on Blu-ray. I did not see a Blu-ray, but I would be interested to see if it is on Blu-ray and what extra features it comes with. Almost all of these come with the documentary called World of the Dark Crystal. This is the one that Doug was talking about and I was talking about earlier in the show, that shows the behind the scenes, that has the making of the Dark Crystal. It shows how a lot of the puppets were made and the special effects were done. So the World of the Dark Crystal is on almost all of those. The special edition contains two additional documentaries. One's called The Shard of Illusion. The other one's called Light on the Path of Creation. And basically one of them talks more about the story of the Dark Crystal. And the other one talks about, you know, some of the background of the characters and basically the history of the actual story. But those are all on the 2007 one, the two-disc release only. They're not on the other releases. I'm going to get rid of all my Star Wars stuff and just start collecting DVD releases of the Dark Crystal. There's so many releases of this thing.
Yeah, that's cool. I got to check that out because I really want to see that the world, you know, the making of the, what is that, the World of the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching. And you know what? I was disappointed, and I think it's because I think Henson Productions is pretty aggressive when it comes to defending its copyright, because this is the type of thing that I thought would be on YouTube, and I spent some time looking, and I could not find a copy of it on YouTube. There's a YouTube clip that has about the first 2 minutes of the documentary, just to give you an idea of what it looks like, but that's it. So
I'll have to poke around the old Amazon. Or
yeah, but the 25th anniversary, that's the one you want. You know what? I did find, when I was looking on eBay, I have to look and see if it's still there. There's a Dark Crystal lunchbox, and it wasn't that much, but I thought, you know, I have about 20 retro lunchboxes right now. I try to only get metal ones. I have a few plastic ones, but so I rotate them out. I take my lunch to work. Which is terribly embarrassing, but I really don't care. I just, it's not the walk through the building. It's the walk through the parking lot, because there's sometimes I can't park very close, you know? So I get my little thermos and, you know, my sandwiches or whatever, and I take it in. So I got to go check and see if that Dark Crystal lunchbox is there. Cause I would love to, I don't know. Did they ever, I'm trying to think what food they showed in the movie. I guess they showed the Skeksis meal.
Spaghetti.
What else?
Rollies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I could get my little Dark Crystal snacks and take them to work with me.
You got to be careful. They're fast.
Well, hey, I have good news for you. I just checked eBay again, and there are several Dark Crystal lunchboxes, and there are a couple for $9.99. Buy it now.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm about to.
And they're tin or the plastic?
No, these are metal. These are old school.
Well, the plastic ones only had one picture on them anyway. They only had a picture on the front.
Yeah.
The metal ones had pictures all around.
I was looking up that World of the Dark Crystal, that collector's book. And I mean, on Amazon, it's going from 30 to 30 bucks to 122.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's some like collectible ones. So, but that, yeah, it sounds like a really interesting, interesting book. And you can get them new for 30 bucks or used for 23. I mean, to me, it's worth the $7 to have a brand new book. Yeah. So I'll have to keep that in mind. My son, you know, like I said, he likes it. He loves all types of like fantasy and, you know, knights, anything like
that. Christmas
kind of
is coming.
So. Yeah. And there is a FizzGig plush as well for $8.50.
Oh, look at that.
So yeah, that'll probably be mine before the end of the night.
Do you ever, Sean, you ever buy your kids things that really you want? Like for Christmas?
Honestly, no, not really. But I will also say my wife does most of that other than Santa, the stuff from Santa. Like,
I was gonna
stuff
say, I mean, I would try not to, but I don't know. Maybe I'd tell my kids, like, God, wouldn't you really like a Dark Crystal lunchbox? Try to talk them into it.
I may hit that one up though. That's a good price because I've been trying to collect like thermoses, not the actual lunchboxes, because any of the lunchboxes I come across have really been beat up. So I'm like, well, you know, we've been to a couple antique stores and I'll get a thermos here, a thermos there. And generally they're in better shape than the actual tin lunchboxes. A lot of times they're beat up. You can't close them. And to me, it's like, I'd rather just have a thermos, takes up less room and still has the same feel for me. But although if I come across, the one that I do remember having other than the Empire Strikes Back was a Dragon's Lair.
Oh, that's an expensive one. Yeah.
Yeah,
you got good taste.
Mom didn't keep that. Mom didn't keep that. That one went away too. So, yeah, definitely good movie. Any other scenes or anything you guys want to talk about? Doug, anything you wanted to bring up on this one?
The chasm scene where he climbs up the chasm. Still to me, I don't know. It doesn't seem like that much today. But this was, I mean, you could make the case that this was the first action movie I ever saw. And I was, you know, a big lover of action all the way until I realized, you know, that real life doesn't work like it does in action movies, which that was about 6 months ago. So I've been a big lover of action movies all my life. Yeah. And that was one of my first action scenes. And I remember, you know, he's in the Gotham tunnels and I was terrified. And they break through the wall and he's in the chasm, which will be a straight shot to his goal. But I remember thinking, he's not going to make that. He can't make that climb, you know. So out of all of them, that's probably the other biggest scene in my mind besides the ones we've covered is that chasm climb.
Yeah. And what about maybe I don't want to say favorite character, but favorite puppet for you?
Well, Fizzgig. I mean, that's, you know, I've said it before. But I just loved him. I mean, that's... He's the one I remember more than Jin. I did like the Mystics. The Mystics, to me, always looked a little bit like the janitor guy on The Muppet Show. You know who I'm talking about? He's kind of like brown or tan.
Bo. Yeah, Bo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's if you look at their noses, they look a lot like him, you know?
And, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, I love the bed. The bed that the old Mystic was laying on, it was designed... you know, to hold his big body and head, you know, and when they stand up behind the Skeksis, you never really get a feel for how big they are. And then as they're about to combine, they stand up and they dwarf the Skeksis.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I could actually go on and on. There's just so much. It's such a visual movie, you know, that there's so many things that you only saw for 2 or 3 seconds that it's still there. And if you watch the movie again, bam, 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 it all comes back.
I don't know. I wish that I had seen it in the theaters, you know, back then. Because like I said, I do remember seeing Labyrinth. And so from my point of view, it almost seems like this was a dry run. That's not quite the right word. But the things that I didn't care for about this movie, and overall I like this movie, so don't take it the wrong way, but the things that I didn't like about this, I feel like they improved with Labyrinth. There's parts of Dark Crystal that have kind of some slow pacing and stuff, which as an adult I appreciate more. I mean, I understand that, you know, they're showing, you know, that you got to get from point A to point B or whatever. So I think that Labyrinth is a little bit faster paced. You know, it's a little bit easier to keep kids' attention. But the thing that I appreciate about the Dark Crystal now is that when you sit back and look at it as an adult, it actually has a lot deeper of a message than I ever saw as a kid. You know, I mean, you have these this race that has been split into, you know, the yin and yang, if you will, where half of them, you know, it's the good half and the bad half, and they're dying because they need each other. But of course the bad half is, you know, so selfish, and they're worried, like Sean said, about living forever. Whereas the Mystics, the peaceful half, know that, you know, they need to be healed. They need to bring this crystal back together and join back into one. So I don't know. There's a lot of deep concepts in here that, like I said, as a kid, I didn't get, but as an adult, it makes you think a little bit.
Oh yeah. Well, you think about what did you call the Ur-Skex?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's what that's saying about them. There's both good and bad inside of them, mm-hmm. which I think is true. You know, so there always was good and bad inside of them. They acted on the bad when they split the crystal, but even when they're reunited, you know, they're still not completely good. In fact, I really don't like them. After they're reunited, you look at them, I was glad that they left because I didn't trust them that much, you know? And so it's the same with all of us. I mean, all of us have, you know, lots of good sides, but also some pretty ugly bad sides, you know? So you got that. I also like, you know, there are things when the mystic, he says, you know, I won't see you again in this life, but I may see you in the next life. So there's hints of something there. When he tells Agra that the mystic has died, she says, where is he? Is he nearby? And he says, the mystic has died. And she says, we could be anywhere, you know? So there's a couple others that I've caught and now I've forgotten them, but there was a couple statements that were made in the movie that were really just, you know, yeah, like you said, for a kid's movie, there was some meaning to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think I saw it in a different way now, picking up on all that stuff. Like I said, I totally enjoyed it. Definitely a great movie. I'm glad my kids like it because it means I can watch it more when I want to. You know, I won't get really dead, which I don't get too often. They're actually pretty open to watching stuff that I liked as a kid, except for the Smurfs. I just can't sell the Smurfs on, man. Really upsets me. My daughter likes it, but the boys, especially my youngest, I want them to watch it.
You're talking old school Smurfs or the new movies?
I kind of saw the newer one at a drive-in when it came out, and I just went to sleep in the back of the van. It did not keep my interest at all. But I think that's pretty much gonna do it for the Dark Crystal. I'm glad you came and joined us. I honestly, I didn't know that you were that big of a fan of the movie, which I'm glad it was surprise.
Yeah, that's why I jumped on it when I saw you guys tweeting about this. I was like, hey, if you're serious, I'm on board, man. You know,
I had kind of just tweeted like maybe this would be the next one because I was actually sitting in the back of the van watching it with my sons while my wife was in the store, and yeah, you were like, hey, if you're gonna do that movie,
yep, you gotta have me for this one. Hot Pink Heather loves it too. I'm sure our daughter will be introduced to it when she's ready for it. So love it, and love talking about it with you guys.
I think what would make a perfect gift underneath the Christmas tree this year for your daughter is a little stuffed Fizzgig.
Well, yeah, that's because that's why I can't really buy one because she'll take it. She's taken my Stinkor. She's taken my Care Bears. Everything's got to be locked up now. All the stuff that I collect, because if she sees it, she thinks it's hers. Mm-hmm. So I may have to wait a couple years to get that Fizzgig.
Well, I think you buy two of them.
She'll take them both.
I know how that goes. I just brought back a bunch of Advanced Dungeons and Dragons books from when I was a kid. They were my brother's, and I played. You know, I played with them as a kid. So he's got two older daughters. They have no interest in them, and I was like, I'll take them. So that was part of the deal. If I came down, I get to come home with them. And like I said, my son loves stuff like that. And I'm like, you can look at it right now, but they're staying in the suitcase. not trying to be grumpy dad, but I've waited way too long for these things. So, Doug, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, what you got going on, what you've been up to?
All right. Well, two places you can find me besides Facebook, of course, and Twitter. There's also authordougmccoy.com. Which I call it the place for all the stuff I couldn't fit in my books. You know, ideally my books would have videos and pictures and all that, but they don't. So that's what the website's for. So you can find me there. And I just released my new book, Playthings of the Past, which is about toys. And Amazon says it's a number one bestseller in one very, very, very small category. But, you know, if they want to call me a best-selling author, I'm going to take it. So you can check that out. And then McCoyCast.com, WordPress.com, I think. is where you find the podcast. We've got 80s anthologies and Never Seen It, which I do with Hot Pink Heather, and Crazy Creepy Cool Movies. And all those also are on Throwback Network, and you can find them there as well.
Yeah, I love Never Seen It.
Mm-hmm. It is a great show.
Favorites.
Oh, I'm glad. Hot Pink Heather's always worried. She's like, I don't think I did good. So I'm glad to hear you guys say you like it. We're just having fun. And, you know, I hope that 20 years from now, my daughter can listen to it and say, wow, Mom and Dad really liked each other. You know, look at the fun they had together.
You just surprised me on an episode. There was one that I thought, what was it? The Outsiders. I thought for sure that you would have seen The Outsiders. And not Hot Pink Heather, because that was like when I was a kid, you know, of course, you know, we wanted to be, until you saw the movie, you know, you wanted to be one of the greasers until you find out things don't turn out so well for them. But
yeah. Well, I grew up with them, so I didn't have to watch the movie, you know. That was my neighborhood, you know, so.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And you know what? It's good that I think I even said this last time that you guys are just having fun doing it. And like you said, your daughter can go back and listen to them a few years from now, hear you guys talking. I mean, we had Nicole on here, my wife, a few episodes. We did the Halloween episode. She was on. She had never recorded a podcast. So it was, you know, it was a little, I think, nerve-wracking for her, but we have plans to get her back on. She's going to be our guest whenever we do any kind of horror flick.
Yes.
So we talked about a few yesterday on the long car ride. I think she had a good time. So
yeah, I think I listened to that one on Halloween morning, actually. So it was great listening to her and you guys. Good show.
Thanks. So Rob, what about you? Any last parting words or?
I don't think I have anything. I know this is a good movie. If you want to see a great one, I'm just giving you all a hard time. No, this is a good movie. And I would just tell everybody to check out throwbacknetwork.net. Look at all the different shows that are on there. And don't forget about that Amazon referral link that's on the side. I know a couple different people have used that. And I'm about to do my Christmas shopping. I know we've got a couple of hours left right now of Cyber Monday. And I've got to buy a couple of things for my wife. So I'll be using that affiliate link. So you'll see some things come through there later.
Awesome. That's cool. Yeah, check out Throwback Network. We have got a ton of good shows on there. I think we have a few more that we may be adding. And so it's constantly growing. Throwbacknetwork.net. You can also find this podcast on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And you can follow us at Throwback Review on Twitter. And we are also on Facebook. So, and if you want to give us a review on iTunes, also greatly appreciate that. Definitely help us out. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of The Dark Crystal. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Your tongue.